Sabbath, we went through lessons we can learn from the fall festivals, the Feast of Tabernacles in particular. And one of the 3 points we looked at was that God does desire us to have a quality life. And we looked at a great number of passages and scriptures that tell us that. We looked at Jabez, who was willing to ask God for blessings, that he would bless him indeed, that he would enlarge his territory. But he also had a wonderful attitude of asking God to... I had to run and get something. All right. He asked God's hand to be with him, and also that he would keep him from evil, that he would not cause any pain. Just an absolutely wonderful, wonderful attitude. But he wasn't afraid to talk with God about helping him advance in his own physical life. And we emphasize reality, that God says very clearly that he's the one who gives us the power to get gain, to get wealth. Also the power to eat it. A lot of people have the power to get wealth, but they don't enjoy it. They often are, suffer because of the wealth that they have. But God says that he wants us to be in the right frame of mind and the right spirit. What I wanted to do today is ask this question, because we really emphasized that reality the last couple of weeks. Is there anything more important than wealth and money? Some of you are giving me the deer in the headlight look right now. Well, I think most of us know that answer, that there are many things more valuable than just finances and money and gold and silver. We spent a lot of time, like I said last week, showing that God's not against that, wants to bless us, not wrong to ask God to bless us, not just financially, but bless us in all elements and aspects of our life. But there needs to be a perspective, because a lot of people get caught up with the fact of, oh, God's for me to have money, then that's all I'm going to go for. That's what my desire is going to be, and I'm going to get it. Now, you know, God wants us to have it, but he wants us to also realize there's perspective in life that all of us need to have. Proverbs 22. Proverbs chapter 22. We'll find that God emphasizes, especially in the book of Proverbs, but in other areas as well, that there are other things more valuable than gold and silver and the wealth of this world. And those are the things we should really be, if I may say, striving for, and also doing our best to make sure that we are able to be gainfully employed and be responsible and, you know, have an income for ourselves and our family, and more than that, to enjoy. But things have to be kept in perspective. In Proverbs chapter 22, beginning in verse 1, it says this: A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So God's very clear in the book of Proverbs that, you know, there are things more valuable, a wisdom being one. And you'll often find that as you fulfill these other spiritual elements in your life, that sometimes the financial things take care of themselves. But we know that wisdom is talked about as being knowledge and understanding being more precious than great jewels, you know, that you can find. Matter of fact, they are jewels when you think about it. So God, you know, through David here is urging us to earn the respect of others. Not by buying them off, not by bribing them, but by how we live our lives and who we are, who we become. So God wants his people to be people who are respected. And we know that there are people in our society today who should have respect but often don't get respect because of the attitude and the spirit and the wrong approach that people have in the world today. So a good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver and gold. So you have those two elements. One, to be well spoken of, and two, to be well-beloved. To be well-spoken of and to be well-beloved. You know, if you look at the Old Testament prophet Samuel, when he was searching for a new king in Israel, God told him to go to Jesse's home. And when he was there, he asked Jesse to bring out his sons because one of his sons was going to end up being the next king in Israel. And while he was searching within the household of Jesse, he went through all the sons, and Jesse paraded them before him. And Jesse probably thought, well, surely it's going to be my oldest, my firstborn. Well, not him. Maybe it's going to be this. It's going to be this. It's going to be this one. And finally, Samuel says, Jesse, do you have any more kids? Well, yeah, I do. The run of the family, you know, so to speak, you know, the run of the litter. He's out taking care of the sheep. Well, God hasn't chosen any of these. Bring them in. Why? I can almost say, why? You know, what's going on here? He brings them in, and what does God say? This man is chosen. This young lad, this boy, has been chosen to be the next king of Israel. Because God looked at more than just the outward appearance. He looked at more than just the gold and the silver. He looked at more than just, you know, how well the person was dressed. He looked at the heart. And that is what is really emphasized here, that God doesn't look at the outward appearance. Not that he's against someone dressing well, taking care of himself or taking for herself, wearing beautiful purple outfits and things of that nature. You know, God and my wife loves purple. That's why I noticed that over here. But anyway, God's not against that. He enjoys us coming before him in a respectful manner. But he says it isn't the outward appearance that is the utmost importance to me. It's the heart. It's the good name. It's someone who's well-beloved because of how he or she carries him or herself, how he conducts or she conducts her life. It's the inner character that develops our reputation. So what kind of character causes respect from others? I'm going to look at four characteristics that we might be mindful of, a few how-tos here on how to gain respect in society. Not just because you want to say, I want respect so I can be proud and vain and egotistical, but I would like to be respected because the more I'm respected, the more I can glorify my Father in heaven. The more I can be an example to those around me. And if I'm respected, then they will look at what I'm doing and they will maybe honor the lifestyle that I have chosen, which is to keep God's Sabbath, the holy days, to be involved with those things that lend itself to goodness and righteousness and holiness, as opposed to often what you see in society today. So the first thing that the Bible really emphasizes when it comes to gaining respect of people, and these are biblical principles, not just how much money you have. Biblical principles is, number one, live with honesty. We should be people who live with honesty. In Proverbs chapter 16, in verse 13, Proverbs chapter 16, in verse 13, it says this. Beginning in verse 12. It says, it is an abomination for kings to commit wickedness, for a throne is established by righteousness. So God says, a throne, and all of us have a throne, do we not? It's called where we live, our home, you know, as a husband, our wife, or even our children. And he says that a throne is established by righteousness. Righteous lips are the delight of kings. In other words, the kings take pleasure in honest lips. That's what it basically is saying there, Proverbs 16, verse 12 and 13. Righteous lips are the delight of the king, or the king takes pleasure in honest lips. We live with honesty. And they love him who speaks what is right. They value a man who speaks the truth. They really do. And that's what you will find that most people really admire. When you get right down to someone who is filled with integrity, someone who has honesty. You know, if you think back on presidents and you say, well, who were the two most respected, honest presidents around? And they have this reputation because of what is stated. One guy is known as honest. Abe, honest Abe Lincoln. Another one is George, I cannot tell a lie. Washington, right? So you have honest Abe Lincoln and George, I cannot tell a lie, Washington. And people will reflect upon these two individuals, and they are men who are filled with integrity. History shows that. Not that they were perfect, not that they didn't have their own issues to deal with, but you'll find that those two are well spoken of, and they're well beloved. They're well spoken of, and they are well beloved in our nation, in our country. You know, Jesus Christ said, "I am the truth." I am the truth. The Bible says that God is truth and will not lie. He cannot lie. Who is it who lies? Who's the father of lies? Yeah, Satan. So if we get up with living a dishonest life, if we get involved with, have a tendency to be, shall we say, individuals who would lie or prevaricate or kind of fudge the truth, then God says, who's your father? You know, I didn't see the movie, but I guess there was a movie out there where someone said, well, who's your daddy? And then all of a sudden that expression became popular. I, you know, had four or five of our teens down in Cincinnati East joking about that. Oh, it's been a few years ago now. You know, who's your daddy? Basically, who is it who takes care of you? Who is it, you know, that type of thing. We don't want to dishonor God, but who is our father? Who is our father? Well, hopefully it is God and our elder brother, Jesus Christ. And it's not Satan. You know, it's not the adversary who is the father of lies and a murderer and has been from the beginning. When you're speaking there specifically of the beginning of mankind, when it began to deceive Adam and Eve. So God says he is truth. He will not, he cannot lie. In Proverbs 25 and verse 13, and we'll be in Proverbs a lot today, in Proverbs 25 in verse 13, it says, like the cold of snow in time of harvest. All that is being stated there is that when harvest time came, that was when they were really working hard, you know, bringing in the grain, etc. And a nice cool breeze coming through when you're hot and perspiring and sweating, you know, that feels really good as opposed to having the sun, you know, beating down on you. It says, like the cold of snow in time of harvest, is a faithful messenger to those who send him, because he refreshes the soul of his masters, or his employer, or those who send him. So, you know, there's tremendous value in honesty. Matter of fact, there's more to honesty than just having a truthful tongue. Having a truthful tongue is very important. But living an honest life also involves being trustworthy. You know, that's part of the good name process here as well. Living with honesty is being trustworthy as an individual. Just like this individual who is compared to a nice cool breeze in the heat of the day, or when you're out working and perspiring and it just feels really good. It's kind of like when you're really working out in the sun and you find a shady spot, you go sit down, have a glass of water during your break. It just feels so, so good. And God says that's what an honest person is to be like. Genesis 24 is a wonderful story. Genesis 24. You know, Abraham is one who's very much beloved. By God, and he was growing older, well in advanced in age, as verse 1 of chapter 24 tells us, and he's wanting a wife for his son, and he wants one from his own family, you know, family area, someone of his own background. And you'll find here in verse 12, because what he does is Abraham sends his chief servant, you know, his chief or oldest servant. Verse 2 says, who ruled over all that he had. And he has him go through this procedure that was common back then. We don't do it today. We have other elements that we do, shaking of hands and so on. But he tells his oldest, most reliable servant, one who had rule over all that he had, that he wanted him to go into the country to his own family and get a wife for his son Isaac. And the servant takes the responsibility on himself and kind of says, well, what if she won't come? Then David says, I won't hold you to your, you know, to the promise that you've made. So let's start in verse 10. I said verse 12. Let's start in verse 10. It says, then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, for all his master's goods were in his hands. And he rose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made his camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at eventime, the time when women go out to draw water. Verse 12, then he said, O Lord God of my master Abraham. I want you to notice the attitude of this servant, of this employee, we might say today, okay? This individual who was working for Abraham. And he says, O Lord God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. What a faithful servant. How would you like to have, you know, if you owned a business, employees like this, instead of we're going out on strike because of this, that, or the other thing, you know. A man deserves a good day wage for the labor he gives, and then also the employer deserves a good day's work for the wages that you receive as an employee. But here's a man who prays to God and says, please give give me success, not because I want to be successful, although he did, but give me success so that you will show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, please let down your pitcher that I may drink, and she says, drink, and I will also give your camels drink. Let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. Excuse me. So here's an absolutely phenomenal attitude of somebody who's being honest, living an honest life, being trustworthy with goods that he's been given. A lot of wealth, you know, put into his hands. And yet he was concerned for the person that he was working for. Let's drop on down to verse 26. The servant is taken, you know, to the home of Abraham's family. It says, then the man bowed down his head and worshipped the Lord. And he said, blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth toward my master. And for me, being on the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren. So here he's following through and talking with God about, again, the blessings that God's giving to his employer. You know, working hard for his employer. And thanking God that God led him, enabled him to do what? Led me to be able to be of value to my employer. In this case, my master Abraham. Thank you for guiding me. And then dropping over to verse 32, it says, then the man came to the house, and he unloaded the camels, and provided straw and feed for the camels, and water to wash his feet, and the feet of the men who were with him. And the food was set before him to eat. And I want you to notice what he said. He said, I will not eat until I have told you about my errand. And he said, speak on. So the sumptuous meal undoubtedly was laid before him. You know, nice beverages. You know, these people were not poor, to say the least. Okay? And the man says, you know what? I don't want to eat. Not until I give you, until I tell you my errand, until I tell you what it was. Or why it was that I was sent here to fulfill that which my master Abraham has sent me to do. Again, look at the attitude. Look at the spirit. Who would not want workers like that today? This is an example, excellent example of the man putting forth his responsibilities. You know, I mentioned a book about 4 or 5 years ago here called A Message to Garcia. Anybody read that book? A Message to Garcia? Not a lot of you. A few of you have. How many teens have read that book? You now have an assignment. I would ask all of our young people here, even you preteens who are reading, to get just a little bitty small book. It's called The Message to Garcia. I've got a leather-bound edition at home that's very prized, a possession of mine. But it's an easy read, maybe 20, 30 minutes when you guess, Bart. I saw you raise your hand. It's not that long. But it has a wonderful story to it of being responsible, being honest in the duties and responsibilities that you have. And so I would ask all of you to get that book, and I'm hoping it's at the library. It's really an old one. However, I have two copies. If anybody would like to borrow one of them, I will not give you my leather-bound personal copy, but I've got another one. I'd be more than happy to loan out to anybody who would like to read it. So, Message to Garcia. It's a book on being dependable and being honest with the life that you live. And Abraham's servant here, you know, I was looking through this actually last night and this morning when I was refreshing my mind and what I wanted to cover, and I couldn't find the name of this guy. If any of you going through your studies come up with the name of this servant, let me know. But I said, you know, I'd like to be able to quote this guy's name, and I could not find it anywhere. But I will always remember that Abraham's chief servant was a very honorable, honest, and dependable man, and a very fine, fine employee, to say the least. There's nothing that destroys reputation quicker than broken promises. Now, we all have times when things come up, and maybe we've said we want to do something, and we can't do it. The better part of wisdom there is to call the individual and say, hey, look, I know we had this, something's come up, can we reschedule it? But if it's an ongoing, and sometimes we can do things, you know, that we forget. If it's occasionally, that's one thing. And sometimes as we get older, we forget more. But I remember my father, I think I can tell on him, when I was sitting with him, we were there in Belleville, Illinois, where he lived, and he had the Belleville Church and the Mount Vernon Church. And we're sitting there on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, we were in town, and it was probably about 8 o'clock, 8:30 at that particular time, the phone rang. And my dad picked up the phone, and he listened for about 15, 20 seconds. He says, oh, no! Of course, when he said that, we all paid very close attention to what was going to next come out of his mouth. Anyway, he says, I am so sorry. He says, I forgot about that. Well, they didn't have a Bible study regularly up in the Mount Vernon area, but they would have one occasionally. And they had set this Bible study up, I guess, like a month and a half before, and he didn't write it down. And he's sitting there, and about, I guess, 50 people were sitting in this hall about 2 hours away. And they waited until about 8 o'clock, and then they called him, you know. And, you know, he didn't just have egg on his face. He had the entire chicken house. You know, I can't throw a stone because I've had that happen to me. I mean, I haven't forgotten a Bible study, but there are some times where I haven't written something down, and it has slipped my mind, and, you know, I'm embarrassed, you know, and I have to apologize. It's happened to me over the years. That's why anymore, all of you know, that if somebody sees me, for instance, at church and says, well, can we get together? And I'll say, well, I don't have my calendar with me, but yeah, let's schedule it for a couple of weeks. And I will, the last 10 years in particular, 15 years, I've said, call me, email me, and remind me. Before, when I was early and young in the ministry, I felt that was, I shouldn't do that. I should, as a minister, I should write these things down, or I should have a memory where I don't forget it. I learned early on that humble yourself, Frank, and ask for help, you know, and send an email or call me and let me write it down so that, you know, it happens. But I can remember one time when I set up a visit at my home for I'll just say 7 o'clock, and I've got this visit taking place. I'm sitting in the office with this couple, and it's about 05 till 7, let's say, and the doorbell rings. And so I get up to answer it. And when I answer, I open the door, and there standing there in the door is a visit that I had scheduled. This happened in Lakeland, Florida, by the way. And I opened the door, and you know when I saw the person, what happened to me? Light went off, buzzer. Oh, that's right. When you see the individual standing, that brings back memories like, oh, I did schedule this visit. I got this visit in the office, and this person's, you know, waiting to come in and visit. Thankfully, the visit in the office was just a very short one, something had, you know, that had also been scheduled. So I said, well, come on in and have a seat. I said, I'm wrapping up a visit. Cover yourself as well as you can. And he said, oh, I forgot about it. Have him come in, have a seat. And we wrapped up the visit about 5 minutes or so later, and the person left. But it happens. It happens. Have you ever had anything like that happen to you? You know, you can't throw stones at other people. I've had people forget requests that I've made, and they've committed to it. But it's not a regular thing. You have to be willing to forgive and say, hey, it happens, you know. It happens. It happens to all of us. That's why I talked about the high priest, you know, that he can have mercy on those he works with because he himself knows he is but a man. He's not God. He's a man fulfilling that responsibility. So my dad apologized profusely. And I think there was a deacon there, and he just said, why don't you, you know, pick out something you've been studying of late? You talk about a major impromptu, and cover it with them for the next half hour or whatever else, and give them all my, because there's no way you could leave and drive 2 hours and get there, you know. So it happens. It happens. So that is not a matter where if you forget something, you're not being trustworthy. You apologize, you go, but if it's a continual, ongoing, habitual type of thing, there's nothing that a person, that will cause a person to lose a reputation than broken promises, you know, on an ongoing regular basis. God doesn't want us to be that way. You know, when you say I do, for whatever it is, even in marriage, you're committing yourself to accomplish what you can. And the scriptures state that even if you go usury, which you shouldn't do, he says go and try to get out of it, right? In other words, go and talk about it. Go and try to remedy the situation. So if something does come up where you said, I want to do this, and you absolutely can't do it, then you want to go and try to remedy to do it another time. There's a scripture that says that you swear to your hurt, right? That if you make a commitment and it's something that needs to be done and you have this golf game you've set up or got this, you know, shopping spree that some of you ladies may be going on and you remember I've got this commitment, it's wiser to give up the shopping spree in the golf game, right? You know, I'm looking at my golfing buddy over here, to go and take care of that commitment. You know, you swear to your hurt. You know, he and I haven't gotten out this year. Matter of fact, I haven't played one game of golf this summer. I usually try to get out 2 or 3 times, but haven't even gotten out one time. Next year, I'll probably play really well because I will have forgotten all my bad habits. Doesn't work that way, does it, Alan? So God wants us to be honest, forthright individuals. And you'll find that by being that way, that you will find respect coming more your direction. You know, if you accept a position with a company, you want to fulfill that responsibility to the best of your ability. When a friend confides in you and you promise to keep his hurts or her hurts to yourself, you know, you do it. You keep that promise. You know, if it's something that's going to ultimately hurt them, then you might ask them, you know, Frank, maybe you want to go get some counseling about this. And if something that's very, very, very dangerous, say, well, Frank, you may want to go get some counseling about this. And if you don't, I just want you to know up front, I'm going to take you to get some help. Okay? So it's a matter of keeping those words and those promises to individuals. You know, Proverbs 24:26, I'm not going to turn there. But if you want to, I would suggest that you do so. The book of Proverbs not only challenges us to be honest, but also tells us the results of being honest. There are really good results in being honest. Matter of fact, Proverbs 24:26 basically says that an honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. You know, obviously said in the right context here, okay? It's like a kiss on the lips. You know, if you and your wife, you know, or maybe say just something's gone on, a little bit of a rough feeling there for whatever reason, or maybe you had a rough day at work and you're just coming home grumpy, and let's say your wife just comes up and plants one on you, and you know, all of a sudden you forget about that lousy day. You know, it's just something pleasant, you know, about a kiss from your wife or a kiss from your husband when it comes from, you know, a good place. So when you are honest, it makes you feel good, and it makes the people around you feel good about you, and that's very important to God. Second point I want to emphasize, excuse me, in this area of keeping a good name, is we want to live with concern for our fellow men. We want to live with concern for our fellow women, for fellow mankind, not just in the church. You know, God says, do good to all. Love the fellowship. There's a little more continuity with us. Should be at least a more of a closeness with us, and we're involved with that, but that doesn't mean that we shut everybody else out. We are known by the company we keep, so we want to be careful. We don't want to run around with people who are going to get us in trouble, angry people. Proverbs is filled with that. But we have a concern for our fellow man. Proverbs 29, verse 7 says, the righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. The righteous care about the justice of the poor. If you read other scriptures, it says the righteous care about justice. You know, no matter whether you're poor or rich, justice is what's important. It's very important. But this is stated this way because at this time, and especially during the time of Christ, and even today, unless you have money, sometimes you cannot get justice in our court system. Matter of fact, sometimes you don't have money, you can't even go to court because you can't afford a lawyer. You know, sometimes they say, well, we can have a court-appointed lawyer. But you'll find that those individuals right there in the middle sometimes have a hard time because they don't qualify for that, plus they don't have, you know, or they go head over heels in debt to get a lawyer. And yet God says, you know, the righteous care about the justice of the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. You know, I think about, I didn't write this down, it's just coming to my mind. I think it's Luke 18, where we covered last week about the unjust judge. And the whole point was pray, you know, pray always. And Jesus Christ, he says, gave this parable about the widow who came before this judge. You remember the story? The parable says he didn't care about God or man. He didn't fear God and had no respect for man. He wasn't going to do anything for this widow. I mean, after all, what can she do for me? You know, type of thing. She can't do anything for me. But it said because she kept coming, it was wearing on him. It says, well, I don't fear God and I don't care about man, but because she keeps coming, I'm going to deal with it. You know, but she needed to be vindicated. And according to the parable, if you read between the lines, she was taken advantage of. What was done to her was not right, and she needed to be vindicated. And only the judge could do that. Well, righteous people, people who want to have a good name, are concerned with their fellow men, with their fellow women, with mankind. They want to see justice done. And they want to see honesty as a way of life. Today we have often what is called the me generation. You know, what's in it for me? There's a balance in that. You know, the disciples said, well, we've left father and mother, what are we going to get? Christ says, well, you're each going to get the opportunity to rule or serve over the house of Israel. He didn't say it was wrong to want to have things, but when you get to the place of the me generation, it means it's for me, even if it means it hurts you. That's a different story. See, selfishness is an attitude that I want only for myself at the expense of others. I don't care what happens to others. Self-concern is not wrong. Taking care of yourself, your family, you know, your neighbors. But selfishness is I'm going to take care of myself and I don't care what happens to you. Okay? Even if it's at your hurt. So you need to balance that out. But today we often have the me generation, and it has the primary concern for just the self and not for those around them. Jesus said, whoever wants to be great among you, let him be what? Let him be your servant. Let him be somebody who has an attitude of wanting to help others, to be willing to serve others, especially when there's a time of need. Christ was very explicit that way. It goes counterintuitive for too many people in this world, in the business world in particular. And yet if you're a good leader, even in business, you're wanting to take your people where? You don't want to step on them to get to the top, right? What do you want to do with the people who work for you? You want to take them to the top with you. You know, I've been doing a lot of study on Jesus Christ and leadership through the harmony of the Gospels. And reading books, you know, on leadership. And a lot of it, there are a number of individuals out there like Covey and others, Gray, who talk about a good leader is someone who looks out for the welfare of those who work for him or her, who want them to be successful in life. And I was thinking about Jesus Christ and how he approached that. And I thought, a good employer wants to take his employees with him up the ladder of success. Is that not what Jesus Christ said he wanted to do? He came and died that we might be able to ride that ladder of success with him to the top. Just putting it in a strictly business leadership perspective. That Christ says, I'm taking all my staff, and you're his staff. I'm taking all my staff with me up that ladder of success. I'm not stepping on them to get up there. I'm taking them with me. And that's the attitude that Jesus Christ has. You know, he has a concern for mankind. Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. Beginning in verse 3, Proverbs 3:3, it says, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the table or the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Let me reread that to you. Proverbs 3:3-4, let love and faithfulness, that might go back to being honest, right? Forthright. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Those are the two attributes that are right there in Proverbs that tells you how to gain favor with men. In a right way. In a right way. Anybody know what Luke 2:52 says? Yeah, right on. Jesus Christ grew in the favor of God and man. Didn't mean the Pharisees liked him, because they were jealous. They were not of the right spirit, right attitude. They saw him as someone who was going to potentially do what? Compete with them. Their attitude wasn't taking people to the top with them. They wanted to step on people to get to the top. And anybody who would be in competition with them, they were going to beat down. Even kill them. Which is what they wanted to do to Jesus Christ. But Jesus Christ, we were told very clearly in Luke chapter 2 and verse 52, that he grew in stature and favor with God and with men, because he lived what we just read there in Proverbs. So, a good reputation does come from a willingness to think of others, not just yourself, but thinking of others. So, just as a question, when was the last time you did something for somebody else? In the neighborhood, at work, fellow member in the congregation. How many hours a week, a month, do I give service to somebody else? You know, we have a number of our older people, our seniors, who have actually volunteered, given up 3 or 4 or 5 hours of their week or their month to serve here, there, and someplace else. We've got 3 in places around the United States that I'm aware of who goes in and serves at a hospital information area. You know, they're always looking for somebody to help. All kinds of things that people can do. Let's move on to the third area that the Bible emphasizes as a way of keeping a good name, those two things that we realize are more valuable, and that is to be well spoken of and to be well beloved. And that is Proverbs, again, in particular, and Psalms as well, talk about living a life of generosity. And by living a life of generosity, I'm not just talking about money, okay? That's part of it. If we have the availability, that we can help. And I would think that Jabez, who asked God to bless him indeed and to enlarge his territory because of the attitude that he had, was an individual who probably lived a life of generosity. And as he was blessed, he was able to bless other people. And that's something to realize, too, that if you're blessed by God, if God gives you the power to get wealth and to eat it, then you also have the power to help others even in that arena. Whereas maybe if you don't have those things, you cannot help others as easily. Now, Psalm chapter 112. Live a life of generosity. And you'll usually find people with good reputations are generous people. In general. Just in general. It may not be their finances, it might be their time, their words, their comfort. They're generous with giving out those things from them that help other people, you know, receive help in time of need. After all, we're told by God, right? Come before the throne of God. Freely come. You know, come boldly. Especially in time of need. Are you known as an individual, if somebody had a need, whatever it might be, that they could come and talk with you because they know you're honest, loving, and generous? I would hope so. Psalm 112, verse 5 says, good will come. Okay, good will comes. Good will comes to him who is generous and lends freely. Now, this is talking about the availability of helping others. This is a whole other sermon when it talks about lending freely. There are those who might have needs, and there are those that you actually lend freely by breaking their plate because they've gone to an extreme where they are takers and are abusers and want to use people. But the attitude is to be generous. I don't know about you, but I would love to have a life filled with good experiences. Wouldn't you? I want my life to be filled with good experiences, not lousy experiences. We're told here, good will come to him. Good experiences will come to him or her who is generous. And I would like to have good experiences. And God says you can. How many here have heard the name Andrew Carnegie? I figured you older folk would. Even some of you younger ones, Andrew Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie was kind of an anomaly in some respects, if you do a little reading about him. But he was one of the more respected empire builders, quote-unquote, of his age, of his time. Unlike the guy we quoted earlier from England, J. Paul Getty, who was a curmudgeon, a very stingy person. Today he would be a multi-billionaire. He left his millions, I guess 750, 800 million, to a museum in California that would have his name on it. But he had a mansion, and he was the wealthiest person in the world at one time. But in his mansion, I think I mentioned this earlier, he put in pay telephones. Because if he had guests, he didn't want them using his phone and having bill run up. So he put pay telephones in his mansion. And when his son was sick, he would not even pay for his hospital. Bill. Also, when his son died, he didn't go to the funeral. I did forget to mention that. Very just different individual. Andrew Carnegie, on the other hand, was a little bit different. Let me read something I pulled off the internet. So, Andrew Carnegie is a man who died well favored and with a good reputation. When he died, they found a piece of paper in his desk where he had written out his life goal. You know what his life goal was? He had written the goal out when he was 20 years old. So when he was 20 years old, he wrote this out on a piece of paper, and he kept it. And when he died, they actually found this paper in his desk. The paper said, I will spend the first half of my life making money, and then I will spend the second half of my life giving it all away. You know, and he did. You know, he was a very generous individual to many causes and to individuals, to many of his employees who ended up being sick and hurt, you know, back at that particular time. That's what he did. He gave away more than $450 million during his lifetime. Now imagine what that is worth today. He's a multi-billionaire once again. And he still remembered. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 25. Proverbs 11. Verse 25, reading this from a modern translation. Again, Proverbs 11, verse 25, it says, "A generous man will prosper." I believe it says generous soul will be made rich in the King James, New King James. But a generous man will prosper, and he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. It's kind of an oxymoron. The more you give away, the more that comes back to you. Cast your bread upon the waters, right? See what comes back to you. It's this attitude and the spirit that is just phenomenal. The more you give, the more will be given to you. So a generous man will prosper, and he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. So talk about mercy. And what Christ said about mercy? He who gives mercy shall what? Receive mercy. There's something about an attitude and spirit that when you are the way you are, others will come back to you the same way. He who gives mercy will often receive mercy from other individuals. The last point I want to cover in keeping a good name is all of us need to learn to live a life of humility. Living a life of humility. And I think most of our people do that. Proverbs 18, verse 12. Proverbs 18 and verse 12. Says humility comes before honor. Humility comes before true honor. People will often buy honor, or they think they have honor because of their wealth, and they will get people who are known as sycophants, right? Who cling to you and tell you how good and wonderful you are because of what you might be able to do for them. But true honor comes to a person who does have humility. And you might want to circle the word humility. Basically, what we're being told there, and you can read also in other places where it talks about pride coming before a fall, that humility can keep you from stumbling, where pride inevitably will find itself with many, many roadblocks, stumbling blocks in front of it. So God is telling us, stay humble, or there's a greater possibility of stumbling. I think if I were to ask you this question, would you find that you enjoy being around people who are truly humble or around people who are on an ego trip? Have you ever been around people who all they can do is talk about themselves? Usually there's an insecurity in that person when you come down to it. But somebody, all they can talk about is all their great accomplishments, what they've done here, what they've done there, what they've done. All they do is talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and it's about themselves. Yeah, I would much rather be with somebody where you can carry on a conversation and discuss this, that, and the other thing. It's much more pleasant than having to be around someone who all they want to do is talk about themselves. And I've got a family member, you know, not in the church, who is that way. And I've been in the car with, I started to say who it was, as far as gender, I won't even say the gender. I've been in the car with the individual that I couldn't wait for us to get to our destination and get out. Okay? Because you would bring up another subject, and you would discuss that subject, but eventually it would roll back to how they handled it, and how they did it, and how they accomplished it, and how they knew this, and how they knew that, and how they accomplished this, and how it's just over and over, and you finally change the subject, and you're fine for a minute or so, but eventually wraps around how they also did that, and how they also did the other thing, and how they also accomplished this, and how they always accomplished that. It can be a little bit irritating if you're not careful. You know, we don't want to be that type of individual. We want to be someone who's filled with humility. Proverbs 16:18 said, "Pride goes before destruction, whereas humility comes before honor." In Proverbs chapter 27, there are two verses I want to look at here. And we'll come, we'll work backwards. We'll go to Proverbs 27 in verse 21 to begin with, and then we'll roll back to verse 2. Proverbs 27 in verse 21 says this: a man is tested by the praise he receives. What's that telling us? A man is tested by the praise he receives. Proverbs 27 in verse 21. Proverbs 27 in verse 21. The New King James puts it this way: the refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, and a man is valued by what others say of him. In other words, it's the same thing as saying a man is tested by the praise he receives, what people say about you. The question is, how does an individual handle praise? See, if you're not careful, when people praise you because you've done a good job, the tendency can be you are tested by that. How do you handle it? Yeah, I knew I'd do a good job. What else did you expect? You know, and if you get praise and praise, if we're doing a good job, I'm not saying that somebody's just trying to, you know, lick your boots, but they're honestly giving you an honest compliment or whatever else, that how you handle that, you're tested in that area. You know, the first time you handle it well, the second or third time, yeah, you know, I am pretty good. Fourth or fifth time, hey, I'm better than good. And pretty soon, you know, egotism enters in and you're tested by it, and you fail. Whereas somebody who has true humility, when he or she receives praise, they appreciate it. We all appreciate praise, do we not? There's nothing wrong with that. We appreciate being told, you know, well, you know, John or Marianne or Mr. Fowle, you know, you did a great job with this. You know, Dave's not here, so we can brag on him a little bit. Dave Hemsley did a phenomenal job in Gatlinburg. He did an absolutely magnificent job coordinating the auditorium. Just everything ran really, really smoothly. And I've told him that, you know, on three or four different occasions. I've told him how much I really appreciate the fact of how things went and how well he did. We're going to keep his head small because he's not here to hear this. Okay. But nothing wrong with, you know, appreciating people giving you a compliment. But it does test us as far as where we stay. You know, all glory goes to God. You know, God's one who gives you or me or whomever we want to talk about the ability to do what we do. Nothing wrong. I had a hard time when I didn't have a compliment given to me, knowing what to say, what to do, you know. And finally, somebody said, well, Frank, if anyone ever says something, just say thank you. Just let it go at that. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You don't need to say, well, nah, it was a lousy job, you know. Or, yeah, I did a good job, didn't I? You know, just thank you. I appreciate it. And let it go. Just let it flow, you know, and move on from there. So a man or a woman is tested by the praises he receives. How do we handle praise? You know, humility is not walking around with your head hanging down. It just isn't. That's not humility. In some respects, it's a type of pride. I'm so proud that I'm humble, you know, type of attitude. Humility is not denying some of the strengths that you have. You know, that if you know you can do something well and there's a need in that area, you come and volunteer. You know, say, you know, I've had a little experience that. I think I know how to handle that. If I can be of assistance, more than happy to do it. You know, it's not a matter of denying your strength, but it's a matter of saying, I know that all glory goes to God, and I know that there are other areas of my life where I need help. You know, and I've got my own weaknesses that I still need to work on and work through, whatever they might be. So it's acknowledgement of God. And then verse 2, as I said, we move backwards. Proverbs 27, in verse 2, says, let another man praise you and not your own mouth. A stranger, and not your own lips. It's just a characteristic that we should be mindful of. Not just going around talking about how great we are. If other lips praise you, awesome. And they're doing it honestly because you've done a good job, great. You've grown and developed your attributes and characteristics, wonderful. But it says, let another man's mouth praise you, a stranger, and not your own lips. Like, see, I've got this one relative that, you know, another individual, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I can tell you the exact location. This one, unfortunately, happened to be a member. And the person was very, did have talents, but again, wanted to always tell you about those talents. And I hated to be, have this individual end up with a conversation with somebody else, not in the church, as far as that's concerned, because I sat during this one. And all of a sudden, they got going back and forth about what they accomplished, what they've done, and they had to do what? Finally, you had to have a ladder, you know. And it was called one upsmanship, outdoing the other, just back and forth. And, you know, after a while, I got up and went and got a cup of coffee. You know, it just, I can't handle this, you know. And yet, let another man's lips praise you and not your own. There's a spirit of humility that's very important. Proverbs 18:12, I read earlier, humility comes before honor. Proverbs 15:33 is the corollary for that, if you want the two scriptures. Proverbs 15 and verse 33 says, humility also comes before honor. It's the same as Proverbs 18:12. So a man is tested by how he also receives praise. Let's conclude by turning to Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12. In verse 2, kind of a summary statement for these points that we've covered. You know, live with honesty, live with concern or love for your fellow man, live a life of generosity, and live a life filled with humility. Proverbs 12 and verse 2 says this, a good man or a good woman, mankind, a good man obtains favor from the Lord, but the Lord condemns a crafty man. So a good man, the kind of man or woman we're talking about today who keeps a good name, you're going to have favor from God, but also from your fellow man, just like Christ did. But it says God condemns the crafty man. The crafty man, according to the Hebrew, is a wicked man, a man who is wicked in his deeds and in his thoughts, and how he carries himself or how she carries herself. It's not an individual concerned about a good name, but an individual who lives a life of selfishness, concerned only for the self, is willing to take advantage of others. So, brethren, do you want favor with God? I do. And I believe you do as well. Your reputation is your most prized possession. If God blesses you because you ask Him to bless you, you know, if you ask God to bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, and you have the attitude and spirit of Jabez, of, again, asking God's hand to be with you always, as I love to add, or keep me from evil that I may not cause any pain. You have that wonderful spirit and attitude, and you ask God to bless you and enlarge your territory, and God does that, keep in mind, if it's financial blessings that come your way, which is great and I hope happens, your reputation is still the most prized possession, more than your finances, more than your house, more than your car, more than anything you have. It's your name and your reputation and your relationship with God in heaven and your elder brother Jesus Christ. That should be first and foremost our prize. And then the others, enjoy them. You know, enjoy that which God gives to you. So what will you be remembered for? What will your children remember you for? Will they remember you as one who took time out for them? Will they remember you as one who was always working, never had time for them? Will you be remembered as one who was more interested in sports than your kids? I throw that one in because I really used to, more than today, enjoy sports. It was very, very a big part of my life. I still keep track of it a little bit, not as much. I definitely was following the Cardinals when they got into the playoffs. And I know the Cincinnati people were not real happy about them winning the World Series, but sorry about that, Mr. Bornhorst. He and I had a little discussion about that while the family was in Columbus last week. But, you know, how will your family remember you? Will they remember you for your temper or for your love? Remember you as a generous individual or a stingy individual? Will they remember you as a child of God or a child of Satan? Remember, God cannot lie. We want to be of God, so we're going to be honest people, right? Satan is the god of what? Lying and death, murder. We don't want him to be our father. So we have choices to make as far as what we're going to do and how we're going to live our life. So brethren, I'm going to put it this way as I conclude. Maintain your good name. Because I believe all of you have a good name already. Just maintain it.